And Tiffany.
Okay, we have board time on Wednesday, 12th November at 2:37.
Commissioners, I'm going to take the liberty to adjust the agenda just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think you're aware that we have a weather system on the way in, part of the periphery of that polar vortex. And the county has a method for evaluating road conditions and weather conditions and making a call on whether or not the county will open for business. And so I've got Heath and Francine here just to answer questions or explain the process. And Heath, it begins with you. Will you explain what you do as part of that process?
Yeah, I throw on my skis and I can ski there. It's open. Actually, right now we're always watching the weather, and the forecasts are a little bit mixed. But our crews are already out right now, pre-treating the roads and putting down de-icer in key locations, just in anticipation of ice coming in. And then obviously we'll have crews on staff through the night, and then early in the morning tomorrow, at some point, sometime between 3 and 5 in the morning, I'll get in contact with our crews, who will have been out around checking out the various conditions, and then they also check in with the school districts and see what they're thinking as far as cancellations or anything like that. And then I'll gather that information and then get in touch with Mark, and we'll kind of talk it over. And based on what we're hearing about the conditions, you know, if it's just snow, usually it's okay if they're pretty well ahead on the roads and keeping up with it. You know, a lot of times we're in good shape. If it's a lot of ice, that might be a different story. But I think the only time we've actually closed in advance of opening that I can recall was one time in 2004. Mm-hmm. And that was a significant.
That was event. Extraordinary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, later that year at the safety conference, they had hats embroidered that had a snow plow. And it was called, the ICE event 2004.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every employee got one of those. So that was certainly an out-of-the-ordinary type of event. Now, if we make the call, then I call Francine, and then Francine puts a message together, gets it on the county phone system, and there's a number for county employees to call.
Which is?
Yeah. They just changed the number today. Sorry.
Well, we put a notice out.
We just put the 397-2055.
2055.
In the past,
and it's on our website.
The chairman of the board always was included in that notification and consideration.
Okay. Okay.
In fact, before in the past, it was up to the chairman to make the decision.
Okay.
So, please keep me in the loop.
Okay. If you want a 4:30 a.m. phone call, I'd be happy to make it. I'll only call if we contemplate closure.
You better call before you.
Yeah. Okay. If you don't get a call, you can assume that we're going to open as usual.
Isn't the big ice event supposed to happen on Thursday?
Well, that is tomorrow. Yeah.
You know, this
it feels
whole
like,
Tuesday holiday.
I'm on a weekend.
Tomorrow's Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow's
Friday.
We almost had enjoyed that.
So anyway, we just wanted to bring it up.
And when we say open, we mean open for business. There are several other departments and lots of employees who continue to work regardless of whether the county is open or not.
Yeah.
So it doesn't affect all employees by any means.
Yeah. In fact, Barbara Johnson, the presiding judge of Superior Court, expects me to call her to let her know what the county has decided to do, and she can make her own independent call. Because if you have people scheduled for court appearances, you know, you don't want to cancel all those and upset the calendar for the courthouse.
Especially if they show up.
And where our people live, we have people that live close in. We have a lot of folks with all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive vehicles. Some have studded snow tires. So in fact, when we closed in 2004, we had a bunch of folks that were upset we closed because they were ready, willing, and able to come to work, and they were forced to take vacation time.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have rolling stock in the business, and we foreseen the bad weather.
You chained them up here.
You chained up. And we were the first ones out, and the first ones out on the roads to serve customers.
We don't want to lose revenue.
We built our business on that.
Yeah.
Service. So, one of the things that's important to do. All right. Next thing, 101.
Next on the agenda, we've got Matthew Grady and Mark Assaway here to talk about an appointment to the Audit Oversight Committee.
I'm going to actually turn the time over to Matt, and he's going to handle that. So the Audit Oversight Committee consists of three members, the county auditor, chairman of the board, and a citizen. In the past, it's been Vernon Peterson for, from what I hear, it's been forever.
The public side, yeah.
The FDR of the AOC. But, so he decided it was time to step down. He wanted to pass the baton. And so we got together with Greg and Mark and the team and floated some ideas, and we came up with Tiffany. We thought she would be a great, Tiffany Couch would be a great addition to the committee. Great reputation in the community, and business record of accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And so we are submitting Tiffany's name to the board for your approval to bring her onto the committee.
I actually received a phone call from Greg Kimsey with the recommendation to have Mrs. Couch considered, and I was just beyond being tickled, because I'd worked with her in the past, and she has a reputation and the ability to do things that never heard possible before. So we're really excited about it, even though we're very proud of what our numbers show and how good our crew is doing. It'd be neat to have oversight, so especially in that profession. So we're excited about it.
The Oversight Committee only oversees Greg Kimsey's audits. Is that all?
No.
What all
no.
the Oversight Committee oversee?
Yeah, of the audit services.
There's a list of responsibilities that are in county code, and I can read them for the record here.
All the levies.
Can I get a copy of that when you're done?
Sure. Yeah, they recommend internal audit priorities to the county auditor. They review and analyze all audit reports. They ensure that management has initiated appropriate action to resolve exceptions or weaknesses noted in audit reports. They apprise the Board of County Commissioners of activities and the results of audits. They ensure that no unreasonable restrictions were placed on the auditors. They review the effectiveness of the county's financial and accounting functions through discussions with auditors. And they coordinate internal audit effort with external audit efforts to prevent duplication and maximize effectiveness.
Stop. You might quit.
How often do they meet?
The city's pretty full.
It's for 12 months, and then
monthly?
It would roll over.
No. As necessary.
It's primarily as necessary. They have one formal meeting a year, and then as audits are completed or discussion needs to be had, they'll have additional meetings.
So it's as needed basis.
I have two questions then, Mr. Chairman. Will this audit committee review the current audit on the fee waivers?
Yes.
They're gonna review that.
As Ms. McCauley indicated, the audit findings or the audit results is actually presented to the Audit Oversight Committee for their review. So our chair, the citizen at large, and the auditor are all part of that. So the report is actually a formal submission to that Audit Oversight Committee.
Okay, what changes can the Audit Review Committee make in the current audit that's already been published and put out?
They can make recommendations, and I mean, their input's always welcome. So
Mark, let me just clarify. The 4 o'clock presentation this afternoon that was
scheduled,
that was presentation by audit staff to the Audit Review Committee?
Yes.
Okay.
And why was it canceled?
This was canceled originally because we were awaiting the response. As from Mark tells us, we're going to go a different path now. So we've rescheduled tentatively for the 25th.
You were waiting for a response from David and Tom?
Right.
Right, and so far they were given 10 days after the 6th of October that they were supposed to respond to that audit, and they haven't done it yet.
We've been
busy.
I'm asking the question.
We've been informed that that instead of the a formal response, they're going to take a different approach and do some analysis on your own.
Yes, I wonder if we ought to discuss that now. I'm very happy to discuss that, but I think what's on the table here is the appointment.
The other comment that I have, and I don't know this young lady at all. I've never met her before until just now, but I do have a concern that we have a commissioner sitting here that she's done a tremendous amount of work for on both the Columbia River Crossing and what else she's worked for him with. And so there's a lot of folks out there in the community that have already, the rumor's already out there that Tiffany's going to be doctoring up the audit. And so I'm just telling you, you can smile, you can laugh, yep. You can do whatever you want to, but I am concerned. And like I say, she's probably a very honest person in that. But I want to make sure that if there's any financial connection, obligation to David, and that there's a conflict of interest in that. And as a county commissioner and her working on an audit committee, that the chairman is sitting there as part of it, I'm going to tell you off the record, I don't think that's right.
I can speak to that if you want me to.
Sure. And I just want to assure you, Commissioner, that the Audit Oversight Committee, their primary function is to help plan at a much larger level, a much broader scale. They help evaluate the risk assessment of the county. They don't have a role in the individual recommendations or results of individual audits. They receive those, but they don't have input into those.
The current audit's already out there, guys.
That's
what
right.
I'm saying is, I don't think that if she comes on board as part of that audit committee, I don't think she needs to have anything to do with what's already in place, what's already been out there to the public, what Greg has already put together, the audit people have already put together. In the future stuff that comes up in the future as part of that, I think that she has every right in the world to participate in it, make whatever recommendations he wants to make, but whatever's already in place that was done on October 6th, I don't think that Tiffany and if I was her, I would refuse to be part of anything that had to look at that audit.
And again, it's not a situation where there's direct input from that. So the report as it is now stands and will be submitted to the Audit Oversight Committee. At that point in the audit process, there's not a negotiation or anything that goes on. It's basically a reporting mechanism. So I don't know if I'm clear on how that works.
No, I'm hearing what you're saying.
Okay.
Very, very clear. But I still have a problem.
You were going to say something?
Well, I just wanted to... couple of things on the record. I was approached by Greg Kimsey a week ago about this, and I've not spoken to either of these two gentlemen about this at all. And I could go back to my records, but I don't think Mr. Medor has been a client since he's been a commissioner. There could be a small gap there during that period of time when he became one. But it's been at least a year, 18 months or longer. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
But that association is there, and the public all knows it and all sees it. So, like I say, on this audit, I think that, me personally, I would recommend that she keep herself clean of this one here, and whatever else happens in the future, congratulations. I hope you enjoy the job.
I think you're talking about something
that's
not going to happen.
Today's the first day I've heard
about
this audit. So.
That hasn't happened is not going to happen. So do we need to ratify today? Or
yes.
Do you want,
it's an appointment. It's an appointment.
This board has to do that. After January, our administrator will do that. So.
I don't think so, but that's okay.
Do you want to make a motion then?
It still has to be committed.
To ratify her appointment?
Sure, I'll make a motion to ratify it. But all I'm telling you guys, I got a serious problem with it, but I'll ratify it anyway. I'll make a motion, and David can second it if he wants to, or you can second it. But I just wish her the best, and I wish that the people in the community understand that the perception is no different than the perception with the person that runs the environmental agency downstairs. So.
You want to talk about Pride Worth position at this time?
Whatever.
I mean,
how far do you want to reach? I think we ought to get over it and move on.
It would be the same. It would be the same.
So okay, there's a motion on the table to appoint Tiffany Couch to the Audit Oversight Committee. I second that motion with great confidence. And I haven't said anything, and I will at this point. I have the greatest confidence in Tiffany Couch as an independent person. It's her independence, and it's her credibility, and it's her integrity that causes her to be able to prosper in the field that she's in. She is the most uncompromising person I know, which is fabulous for any kind of a forensic accountant and auditor. So I can assure you that nobody is going to persuade or influence with a person of that character and that caliber, regardless of whatever she's not temptable. So it's my vote of confidence in her ability to remain and to be and to continue that track record of independence. And not only is she locally here a successful entrepreneur, but she is a part of a larger organization, National Association of Accountants, Forensic Accountants.
Certified Fraud Examiners.
And you are an instructor of others in your field and highly respected. And that it's amazing to me that we have a person of this caliber who's available to participate in this capacity to help our community ensure right. We have transparency, accountability, open government, everything adding up, all the audit stuff. I love auditors.
Okay. Anything else?
I'll have to give her an A+ on the in her evaluation of the East County Bridge.
I haven't seen it.
I didn't do it. I thought you did. I've never even looked at that hole.
Haven't you? I thought you did.
No, I never. Sorry. I've not
well,
even.
Somebody evaluated it.
It wasn't me. It was not me.
I take that back.
So I would like to somewhat echo. I was quite surprised that when I was contacted by the auditor to approve her recommendation. I think that Clark County is very fortunate to land such a volunteer. It just kind of blows me away that you're making yourself available for us. And I want to thank you for that.
Who sits on that committee?
I do.
I mean, total. Who else?
Three. Chair of the board, county auditor, and someone from the local community.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great.
With all that being said, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. Unanimously.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. And thank you.
You're welcome. I look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you.
Now I get to see you once a year.
No, there you go.
Hopefully more often.
All right, you guys. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you, Tiffany.
All right. Next on the agenda are approving of the minutes that we didn't have available for us last week. So we're looking at approving the minutes.
I would 29. Make a motion we approve both the sets of minutes, Mr. Chairman.
I second that motion.
Then moved and second, we approve the minutes of October 29th and November 5th. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Great job. Someone's going to speak on the radio replacement and the financing of that?
Marcus.
Yes.
You want?
I had a couple of instructions on the way out. Radio replacement. We are getting very near the signing of the contract. In fact, on Friday, the contract for the radio replacement project will be going to the Crescent Board for approval. And our, the product of our 4 years of labor in getting this project here are going to come to fruition. We, as a county, will be responsible for a portion of that in the equipment that we purchase for our sheriff's department. We've been able to go through the inventory that is available out there. All of the other departments, and there's many, that use radios, we're going to be able to upgrade under this contract for free. However, the equipment that the sheriff's office uses has to be purchased. That amount right now is about $2.3 million. Earlier in the week, we talked to you about a plan that the finance team has discussed to come up with on how, rather than using external banks and creditors for financing this project, we finance this internally. So what I would like to propose to you as our solution to pay for this is use that internal financing mechanism. We would use the money from our permanent reserve as a loan and be able to pay this up front so we wouldn't have to pay external financing charges. And then we would construct that so that the revenues that come into the general fund through different sources, primarily the unspent budget, be allocated to pay for those one-time costs. We believe that by doing this, we'll not only save the county those interest charges that we would be paying to external sources, but we, through our discipline, have been able to generate on a consistent basis the ability to pay for that internally. So that's the proposal. I would like to be able to take that direction when we go to the CRESA board to have that contract signed to say that the county, we will be paying for ours up front through our own resources, and then I'll work with the treasurer and the budget office, and as you know, we've already kind of worked on these plans to structure the payment from the permanent reserve and the actual payment through the budget process. So
this is some of the stuff that we talked about in the finance committee's meeting the other day.
Yes.
So the savings is huge enough to make the payments on the new equipment that we need, and it's amazing that we've come this far, because it's something I practice in my private business and something I teach my children, mm-hmm. is that people make a living off your of you borrowing money. And if we can borrow money from within ourselves, and it will not affect our level of
fund balance or permanent reserve.
Reserve. When it won't affect that, it will not affect our credit.
Correct.
At all, even though we're working from our reserve, so we're sitting financially very, very good, and it's neat that we're able to do this.
He's asking for the board to formally give him approval to proceed in that direction.
So can you suggest we can vote on it, a motion?
Probably he just needs a couple of nods.
Essentially, to finance the acquisition of the radios using internal financing methods.
Yeah, okay. Something like that.
All right. I'll make that motion, as you just stated it, that we approve that process. In other words, to fund it internally and don't go outside for debt.
And we're not going to go borrow. And one of the things we talked about, what it costs us to borrow money to fill in those low spots, the way we receive our money, that we have a peak of money and then we have a need for money, and we're going to use that money in our needs. So.
Second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye. And I would say just a comment, because there's no opportunity to comment there.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I just want to congratulate our finance team for the coming up with the recommended policies that have made our finances as stable as they are, as conservative as they are, so that we can afford to finance this without going out to debt to do it. So just very well done.
Like
we're, not from,
yep.
we're not borrowing from. We're not borrowing from the future, not from the next generation.
It's great to be in this financial position.
And along with this, just so the board knows, we'll be coming to you later, probably after the first of the year when the payment's due. We have a mechanism now to handle the payment, but in the omnibus, you're going to see budgetary action that will formalize this.
Yes.
So.
Yep.
Great. Just as a reminder, I sit on the CRESA board for y'all, so I'll be there Friday. And if that vote is positive and we enter into the contract, then that will be one step towards binding us to this obligation. So just that you're aware of that on Friday.
Yes, very good. I am curious, because there'll be multiple jurisdictions buying in radios. How many of them are able to do what we just did?
Well, the two largest, the City of Vancouver and ourselves, are both going to pay up front. The smaller jurisdictions, and there's several of them, you're correct. Some will pay up front. A lot of them have been able to obtain grants and other financing mechanisms to pay for their radios, particularly on the fire side. Mm-hmm. There were grants available. And right now it looks like probably the majority of the local jurisdictions will pay for theirs up front. Mm-hmm. The financing plan, it's actually an arm of Motorola that we'll be working with. Mm-hmm. We put a limit up to $5 million in the terms of their financing, and we're not going to be anywhere near mm-hmm. that.
So is Vancouver going to external debt, or are they internally funding
it as
well?
They're going to fund theirs internally.
Great, good. Glad to hear it.
As well as most of the fire districts and several of the other municipalities.
Very, very good.
So.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Sorry, right. My kicking is so bad.
No, that's fine.
I wasn't trying to get a bolt for anything. We're already done.
Well done.
Okay, Commissioners, the next item, 1.4, sale of surplus property. Doug Lasher was up here with John Payne. Taylor Halvick, the attorney that's advising them on this subject, is in depositions all day, so Doug Lasher mm-hmm. asked that he be allowed to come next week to address sure. this, and I told him that we would honor that request.
And so I think that he might be talking about something other than the surplus property that we're drumming up.
Well, this is to address the sale of property that the county owns, or doesn't own, but it's in foreclosure.
Yes.
So it's owned by one party, and then they put it out, and other
right.
parties bid on it.
Yeah, so it's not the same as excess property that we
own. That we own, no, the different subject altogether.
We were going to get some answers as for the legal boundaries, what can be done. Do you recall that conversation?
Yeah, that would be Chris Horn.
How's that going?
Well, he's been...
Yes, he's been very
busy.
He handled your RSN thing. You had a nice executive session before this meeting to talk about something else, and he
because so much of that conversation has to do with being informed by Chris first. So I would not bring our treasurer up until Chris is able to provide that.
Well, I invited Doug Lasher at the insistence of the board chair.
Well, I would welcome our Doug Lasher to come up when we already have the answers from Chris so that we all know what that is, because we've already met with Doug Lasher last year regarding this issue, and it's going to be a rehash of the same conversation unless we have new information, which are the answers that we asked Chris to provide us.
Yeah, I think there were two prongs to that inquiry. One was, what does the treasurer do? How does he advertise? What kind of disclaimers does he put out there? And so on and so forth. The other is, if platting and zoning tells us we can't do something, his job is to inform the board on methods to potentially overcome the restrictions of the platting and the zoning regulations. So two separate prongs to the inquiry, and we can do them together or separately, whatever the board wants. Well,
Mr. Chairman, I thought that the last meeting that we agreed to have Doug up here.
We did.
Yes. We all agreed to have him up here. I've asked three continuous meetings that he be allowed to come up here and explain what they do and how they do it in order for the commissioner to better understand
had that conversation with him. Tom's had
that
conversation.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the full commission. You can have all the conversation you want to, but I think the three commissioners need to understand at the same time, David. I can have a conversation. You can have a conversation, but it's not the same when you have the full board sitting here discussing with him, having the opportunity to ask him different questions in a different way. And I don't think it's fair to him. To me, I think it's just beating up on him because he's Doug Lasher. And I think that you had a meeting last year. Well, this is this year. And I think that we need to have him up here to explain to what's going on. And I stood out there twice and watched him auction off property. And they warned the people up front, you know, we're buying the property. And we can circumvent the rules. We can do whatever we want to in order to make somebody look bad. And that, but the only way that you're going to get the truth is to get it from the individual that is in charge of that division.
Commissioner Barnes, just to clarify, the auctions that occurs at the street corner under the gazebo, those are bank foreclosures that the county is not involved with.
Well, I didn't know that, but I still think...
Our treasurer auctions off properties online.
Okay, well, but even with that, I still think we need to find out. I need to know what's going on. The public needs to know what's going on.
Well, and that's why we want Chris Horn here too.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because, and Doug isn't here. Not because it's Doug Lasher. Campaign's over. Yeah. Not because it's Doug Lasher.
Right. Well.
Okay.
Let me say something here, because anytime there's some kind of a implication that some negative thing is happening here, it needs to be addressed, because we need to stay positive and not somehow impute some harm or some plot that's going on that's not happening. So let me set the record straight here. Our treasurer has been doing a very good job for like 3 decades. His integrity and his procedures are not in any way being questioned at all. He's doing not only his function, but he's also making sure that the minimum liability, that the county is not being exposed unnecessarily to liability. So the disclaimers are out there. He's able to fulfill the law's requirement just fine. So this is not about any of that. What this has to do with making sure that we don't sell properties, that we understand, that we know very, very well, are in some way unusable, unbuildable to an unsuspecting buyer, but we know that. That's not Doug Lasher's role. Instead, what we're saying is, instead of being like a used car salesman, we as a county, all of us, we as a county, if we know that there's gravel in the differential, we know that there's sugar in the gas tank, and we know that there's sawdust in the oil, that we reveal that to the potential buyer, if we already know that. That's what this is about.
Right.
So we are doing just fine right now by saying, we just won't tell them, because that way we're not liable.
No, I'm not saying
that. Let me finish, please. Let me finish. This is going the second mile to make sure that those citizens that want full disclosure, that we provide full disclosure without giving them a warranty for the car. This is just simply saying we share what we know, and it's not necessarily something that's being withheld. It's something that we proactively would in a measure of goodwill, all of us, help our citizens don't get in the pickle where some of them have already gotten into. Because we've heard from several citizens that bought property and ended up losing their life savings on it more than once, and we could have prevented that. And this simply solves that problem in a proactive way. That's all. So this is a good thing. It's not any negative thing about our treasurer or anybody else.
I'm not saying, David, you've said the same thing for the last 3 meetings about the gravel and the sugar and the rest of that. All I asked was that the treasurer be able to come up here and explain the process that they go to, how he complies with the state law, how he complies with the county codes and that. And he hasn't had the opportunity to come up here. Supposed to be here today, I guess, because of maybe a court decision and that. But all I'm asking is that we hear from him out of his own mouth, not you telling me what he said or me telling you what he said or what Tom said what he said, but what he's saying to a full board where the administrator's here and the staff is here, so that everybody understands, and including the press, so that they know what's going on. And if this has been going on so long, how come it hasn't been taken care of before? And I don't think that Doug Lasher is going to sit by, or the assessor, which is supposed to be looking after this to make sure that everything is right and above board, would sit by and let the customer get screwed or the taxpayer get screwed. But in order to get it out in the open, so everybody, you say transparency, everybody wants to know the truth, let's get him up here so we can find out what he's doing, and if there's a process that we can make things better so that the public don't have to go through that and doesn't cost the taxpayers $100 million to go out here and search every piece of little one-acre piece of land or half-acre or whatever they are, then we need to have him up here.
Okay. I suppose it really depends on what the purpose and what the point is. If the point is to somehow ensure that we do the best job we can when we sell a piece of property so that foreseeable problems don't happen, then we would find out what our options are first, and that would be the options that Chris Horn would present to us, and then we would certainly, it would be appropriate at that point to have that discussion with our treasurer and say, we've got some options on the table now. we welcome your feedback to participate in that conversation.
Well, the public's been electing for 30 years, so they must be happy as heck with what's going on with him.
This is Wednesdays and Tuesdays. It wasn't handled before. We've sold the same piece of property three times.
Well, but the thing of it is, why didn't you bring it up 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago when it was sold, Tom?
I didn't know about it. I didn't know about it. Year. It was still being bought and sold.
Since I've been on the board, since this has been brought up.
Mm-hmm. The fact that we haven't solved the problem before is not an excuse that we can't solve it now.
But get him up here and let's find out what he's doing. Right. You don't know for sure.
We're going to get him up here. So, all right, moving on. Invocation letter. We have
yes. Commissioners, last week we gave you a copy of a proposed invocation letter to send out to our congregation list this year. Since that time, I got feedback on a couple items that requested to be included in that letter and modifications. So to make that clear, I included this morning the invocation guidance, which this board approved last year, and also a slight revision to the letter, which I gave you last week, and the letter that went out last year for comparison. So the two things that were asked of me to consider changing on the letter were changing the words higher authority referenced in the letter to God. Now, the reason I included the invocation guidance is because that language comes right from your invocation guidance that you approve. So if you want to go that route and change that, I'd ask that you change it on the invocation guidelines as well. Mm-hmm. I did talk to Chris Horn about that idea. And he recommends it not be adopted because it's bringing you closer to the line of being legally challenged. So unless you have a specific objective that you'd like to achieve by changing that from higher authority to God, his recommendation, I think mine, would be not to change it from higher authority.
Okay.
The other request was to include the qualification criteria on the invitation letter. Now, instead of doing that, I added a line that said, please review the official invocation guidelines, and gave the internet location at our website.
Okay.
And the advantage to that is it includes the complete guidelines, and it also includes the list of congregations that we publish. So you can see if your congregation is already on our approved list or if you need to be added to that list.
Great.
And so I think it's more informational and doesn't clutter up the letter. And I also clarified the guidance to call to give an invocation or to add your name to the congregation list. So there's two options. If you're already on the list, you just need to call to schedule, or you can call to be added to the list and be scheduled.
You also have here three paragraphs.
Yeah, so the reason I highlighted the three paragraphs in 3, 4, 5 is those are the qualifications for the congregations. So basically it's number three. You have to be a organization serving Clark County residents,
mm-hmm.
and then number four is you have to be a registered nonprofit, so you have to have an EIN showing that you're a 501c3. Now, if you're not a 501c3, and there are a few out there, you can qualify under five by being an organization that engages in prayer to a higher authority, and you have an established procedure for ordaining clergy. So those are your guidelines right now, so they can qualify either one of those ways.
Thank you, Peter, for this. I think it's very good that this is on our website, and it spells it out very clearly. What I would suggest, though, and that would be to include the items that you've got in pink there, 3, 4, and 5, just simply copy that verbatim into the letter, because this letter may find itself with good intention, handing it to lots of different individuals, thinking, well, I think I want to do that. And they may look at the guidelines, and that simply tells them what we expect and the freedom that they have and don't have when it comes to actually their invocation. But they should be able to have it as part of the letter, those guidelines that say who is appropriate, and 3, 4, and 5 defines those as part of the letter. So they don't have to go look at a website to see whether or not this even belongs in their hands.
Okay.
Would that be simple enough to do?
If the board wants to do that, we can add a couple more lines in there to encompass 3, 4, or 5.
Then the only effort that they need to put forward would be to contact you or Rebecca.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or would you put the three of them on the bottom by themselves?
Somewhere.
We can incorporate that, and I'll consult Holly to get a really articulate final draft.
Great.
Any other questions?
Nope.
I see none.
Good work.
All right. We'll do it as you propose to amend it then.
All right. Moving along then.
I stepped out when the minutes were discussed.
We approved.
Oh, did, okay, great.
Well, lucky for you.
For signature, if you so choose. Okay, that exhausts the list of items on the agenda. I would like to point out that in our FYI online today that we have a piece talking about Bud Van Cleve, who sadly passed away recently.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know.
Yeah, he died November 5th. He was 84. I would recommend that you open up the FYI and have a read.
Okay.
That's kind
of scary. Volunteer-wise, we've had a rough go of it.
Very good man.
Florence Wager passed away, I think, recently, and now we've lost Bud. So
what was the first one? What did you say?
November 5th, Bud Van Cleve.
You said who before him?
Florence Wager.
Oh, yes, she
was
Parks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She was huge in Parks and very active in neighborhood associations, and she participated as a member of our steering committee for the master plan for the Heritage Farm on 78th Street. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he participated in more than 60 local boards, committees, councils, and organizations. And one of the most significant things he did was a children's Christmas party at Sarah J. Anderson Elementary School. Started that two decades ago or so, and it's turned into a gigantic thing for kids in the neighborhood. And so, anyway, just
thought
you would appreciate knowing that that's there.
Always makes me wonder who we're going to get to replace these people because they're irreplaceable. And, just makes you wonder how we're going to get that volunteer in the future.
Yeah, we've got a great volunteer community here, and I know that there are Bud Van Cleves and Florence Wagers out there that 30, 40 years from now we'll be recognizing them for the same kinds of work.
Yeah. Peter, do you have anything else?
Nothing I can think of.
Axel? No. I know what you're going to say.
Oh, I have something. When you're ready.
You didn't get anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've been gone for a week.
I was gone for a week, so I don't have anything.
Did you see any?
I saw plenty. We had opportunities. It was fun.
No,
we had good fun.
You're supposed to shoot them, you know. You don't go out there just to
We had a great week as a family out there, so it was fun. We got a good visit in.
Okay. Ed, do you have anything?
David, I'll let David go first today if he's got something.
Well, I just got a few things from the minutes. You can go first.
Just I just want to make sure that the audit gets out eventually. I want to just.
Never finished that conversation.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it because the audit comes back and we've had several budget reports. And we have a budget report second to none. We have a balanced budget that's second to none. Unlike other agencies and communities around us that raised every fee and every tax you could think of, we've been balancing our budget, adding employees, and accomplishing a lot. So I'm excited about it. I mean, to me, that report doesn't mean a whole lot. All I have to do is see the success that we have. So.
And the other thing is I hope that eventually in the near future that the gravel overlay for the county gets resolved and signed, sealed, delivered so that gets the monkey off everybody's back. Sooner the better.
I thought and, that work group today really brought us close.
Yeah, it was. Did you think so? Very, very good.
So we're really, really close.
We just continue to work now that the freeholders have passed we do everything in order to make sure that the thing works the way it's intended to work. And 5 years from now, if it doesn't work, get rid of it, modify it, whatever you want to do.
I don't think we get rid of it. I think we only modify it.
Oh, yeah.
If you only amend it.
Yeah. So,
my understanding. So.
That and, want to make sure that the public continues to have, even though Jeannie, I hope that she's going to be an independent voice, and I left a message for her. She hasn't called me back. I invited her to come in and look over what I put aside so she would have the opportunity to either throw it away or use it. And I try to save a lot of good documents that file them in such a way that she has the opportunity to look at them and make sure that that she is an independent voice that that not always go along to get along, that is important that the public know that there's independent, whether it's David's independent voice, whether it's yours, whether it's mine, or whether it's hers when she's in here. But I think the public needs to know that there is somebody that that will take up their cause, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring up the city council, but that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right. David.
Okay, two things. One, the fee waiver, it's been almost a year and a half now since that's been in play. And what I've been working on is an independent performance report. It's not a response to an audit. It's an independent performance report based upon the documents that were available that guided us, that said something needed to be done in order for us to change from our status quo, which was stagnation and lagging behind just about every other community in the Northwest. And I will submit that to the board so that it can be brainstormed, made better, collaborated, and that we can somehow have a good, honest, transparent look as not only the performance of what it was intended to do, but also how the impacted our own county funds, the road fund, TIF fund, the community development fund, how those have fared as a result of that implementation. So I will bring that forward very soon, and hopefully we'll be able to have a couple of discussions at board times about it. And I offer that as a draft, and because it is a team effort, and I'll just put a seed out there, which is let the performance be self-evident, speak for itself.
Well, while you're making that suggestion, can I throw one out to you and you can think about it a little bit?
Sure.
I've thought really long and hard because a lot of the residential folks I've talked to, some of the residential contractors, feel like that they're paying full board, basically. They think that they're not being treated fairly. And so, David, I know you guys like to cut fees as much as you can. If you did away with the fee waivers and then looked at lowering both the commercial and industrial fees and the residential fees down to a level where everybody thinks that they're getting a fair shake and not the haves and the have-nots, I would suggest that you look at reinstituting. And the reason why I say that is the transportation, the way the state legislature looks up there right now, there probably won't be a transportation package. So all that transportation money that's going away by the fee waivers to these people, the county probably better build up a big stockpile because they're going to need it to replace what the state legislature is not going to enact. And it looks like the federal government might, they're talking about $100 billion worth of transportation package that they don't think is going to get passed because they need a 10-cent gasoline tax and a 15-cent diesel tax. And so I think the county can't just rely on grants and that all the time. It's great to have the grants come in here to build these projects with, but I would rather see everybody on the same page of construction for commercial, industrial, residential, to bring all of those, the fees down to where everybody feels like they're being treated fairly and that. And I think it would create a lot more work. And the other problem that I have, and I've mentioned it to Mark, I'm coming back down 503, and I've been up and down that road several times, but this time, last Sunday, I'm driving down through there, and I see all these real estate signs. And now they all have great big signs on their fee holiday. They have no sale, nobody's bought it. They don't have a builder. They don't have job creation one on all this property that's sitting out there, this at the commercial property along 503. So my thing is that I told Mark, and I could be wrong, I think that it's not, and if I was a real estate person, I'd probably jump on it too to try to sell something that's been sitting there 5 or 10 years with a for sale sign on it. The only job that was created was the guy that went out there and stuck that sign in the ground and put the red sign on there that says fee holiday. So I think that the real estate people are taking advantage. They don't have a buyer. They don't have a builder. They don't have a customer in mind to buy that property to build anything on. So I think it's unfortunate that they're using the county as a way to sell real estate that they couldn't sell before. So now they put these great big signs on there saying fee waiver holiday on the signs. I've never noticed it before. So, but I if it works, it works. But so far,
that's what we're hoping.
The property's been sitting out there for years. Every time I could take out there and show you on both sides of the road, it's the same property, the same real estate company.
Well, I'll pull two things away from what you just shared.
I went and kicked the soapbox out from underneath both of you in a minute. So.
Well, you're Mr. Chairman.
You go ahead. A short rebuttal.
Well, it's not a rebuttal. It's really two things. One is if the fee, if for some reason our business friendliness policies is unsustainable, or it's unsuccessful, or it just simply was coincidental, the turnaround would have happened anyway, then we should discontinue it. But I wouldn't second guess it until you see the report. And the report doesn't come from me, really. I'm assembling the information from authoritative sources, our own funds here from our auditor's office, our own regional economist. So I wouldn't second guess it. Let the data speak for itself. The second part of that has to do with I'm happy to hear that you actually support the idea of reducing fees on something. And as we see the fund balance increase,
if it's equal, David, for everybody.
Let me finish. As we see the fund balance continue to increase, or be very healthy in uncharted territory or unprecedented territory in our community development department, there is opportunity there. And I hope to reduce some of the, especially the aftermarket kind of fees, where you've got patios, you've got patio covers, you've got other things that would help those small businesses throughout our community to improve the residences that are out there. One of the really insightful experiences that I've enjoyed is when we have our Clark County Fair, for me to go around and look at and talk to the different vendors there and ask them about their experience. And that has stayed with me. If you wanted to add a patio to a home, it's like $1,700, something like that, for a permit fee, and you could about build a patio for that. Don't quote me on the numbers, but there is room for improvement there, and I hope to be able to address that. So
get qualified contractors to do the work, not some fly by nighter.
The free market.
So the homeowners can qualify. It's really important to recognize right now, we have more money than projects that we have ready. So the problem that we're running into, and you can check with Heath, is that the environmental studies that are delaying us a year is creating the problem where we can't do our projects. We have more money in that department right now than what we could spend. Also, the new correction numbers come out this last year, 6,800 jobs new in Clark County.
Scott Bailey.
Scott Bailey report.
Regional.
And we have economist. addressed reducing permits, as he touched on. It used to be over $1,000 for a patio cover or a carport. We now call those silly permits, and we have two standards that a builder or remodeler can get. He could get a book of 10 for $660, or he get another book for major things like roofing and siding and windows for $880 for a book of 10. So those are what we really reduced from a long way, from $1,000 down to $60 or $80 a piece.
But if you look down that list of 169 people, the big numbers that you look at, guys, or Walmarts, they're Kroger. There are companies like that that are national companies that have taken advantage of that, that would have built whatever they were going to build anyway. So if you look down that list, and I agree, Tom, that there needs to be some way that, that the small guy has the opportunity to do it. But most of the people that do something like that, that want to add a patio door, they find some carpenter to go out there on the weekend or at night. It isn't in, on the side and collect a $500 bill for putting a patio door in or for putting in three or four electrical plugs. I see it all the time. We
those
complain.
Those electricians will do it every time. You know.
Well, complain, but the union electricians don't do that because if they get caught, they get a big fine.
Okay.
But it's the
ones
on the outside,
a bad time there.
Plumbers or whatever else. But it would be fine if everybody took out a permit. And if you see the one letter that you've been getting from two husband and wife that continually about somebody built addition on their house, what, 15 years ago, and now they can't get a cover to get their property up and running the way they should because somebody built an illegal thing on. There's a house I told David, you go up there on 50th Avenue, drive in there and look at this three-story house that somebody built that didn't take out a permit one. It's been sitting there now for 7 years, going to rot to the ground because they got a red tag hanging on the fence to where they can't get in there because the guy that bought it at one of these auctions that he bought it, bank foreclosure out at Lake Oswego. And so there's a piece of property sitting there. So if everything was done legitimately and all these people had signs on their truck that says David Bedore Construction and had the contractor's number on it, and that you wouldn't have all these people complaining about somebody coming in and putting roofs on their house that's not qualified. A year from now, the wind comes up, blows off the roof, blows the windows out, or whatever else. It just, we need to legitimize the legitimate employers and the ones that are out there working on the side, the fly-by-nighters, that are doing just exactly what Tom is. Those permits that those people are taking out or having somebody put those projects in that are not paying the appropriate wages or appropriate benefits or anything else. They're making side money in that. So it's not creating the jobs that it should be creating by having a legitimate contractor that does that small work out there working, filing these paperwork, paying workers' comp, paying unemployment comp, all the rest of these things.
You're assuming they're not.
Yeah, well, they're not.
You're really assuming. You don't really know that's what's going on.
I'll show
on
you
there.
One right next to my
and
house.
That's the only one you ever talk about,
no,
the one right
next
to
my house.
No,
I can show
block.
You several of them every weekend.
So, anyway.
I'm not
we
sure.
We need to move on, guys.
Are you proposing a solution to something?
I'm proposing that maybe the county commission ought to look at requiring signs and the contractor's numbers on these trucks. It's the best advertisement in the world. But the people that don't put signs on their trucks are the ones that do all the illegal, most illegal, I won't say all of it, but they do a lot of illegal projects. Painting contractors have got racks of ladders up on the top. David, they're out every weekend. I can take you out and show you these new projects. Ladder 40 feet in the air and some guy up there not even tied off, spray painting. You know, I mean, it's you need to go out there and look on the weekend.
OSHA?
Go out there
you
and
call OSHA to go out there and ride
as
him
soon
up.
As he falls off, you know what? They take him up to the emergency room, and the emergency room takes care of him because he doesn't have any insurance.
Okay. All right. Anything else
yes.
on your list?
Yes.
I'm scared to ask you, but go ahead.
I would think that it would be very appropriate for this board to formally invite Commissioner-elect Jeannie Stewart to come participate, short of voting, as soon as she is able. It would help her to hit the ground running, to participate in conversations, to be welcomed into her role. So with that, I assume that we have mutual goodwill support to her.
I've already invited her.
Okay. Can we write it? I'd like to make a little more formal. If we can just simply write a letter that would we'd each sign it and invite her to come participate, that'd be
I'll
good.
I'll call her up. It might take forever. You know that.
Well, we can call her. I'd also like to
let the administrator do it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, you had nothing else going on.
That'd be good.
Yeah, I've already invited her to sit down and talk about the budget and the Tidemark replacement project because we've got official board action required early in December, and I'd rather her not take office and then get hit by these large things a week later.
Huge. I assume that she knows that she can be sworn in within 10 days ahead of her being certified, so that when she gets certified, or when the election gets certified, that she's able to jump right in without delay.
I don't know if she's aware of that. I'm not sure that...
Better talk to Chris Warren.
Yeah, right. Chris Warren is researching something else that may actually delay her swearing in to the end of the calendar year.
Yeah.
Really?
Really.
Not true. Been there, done that.
Well... That's why we have a prosecuting attorney. He's calling the attorney general's office. He's going to have an authoritative opinion. Mm-hmm. And if you want to override the PA, that'll be your call.
I hadn't heard about that. Okay. The community garden, for the Judge Zimmerman, Darwin Zimmerman, I guess they asked if fees could be waived on that, and we asked to learn more about it. So that we understand it's a good thing that everybody wants to support. Have we learned anything about that?
I haven't heard a thing. I'm kind of surprised by the stuff I hear. They're moving ahead on this, and I'm under the impression everybody out there at Mayberry Park is supporting this. It's unclear. I guess they're going to go in the main gate, drive all the way to the back where the guards are. I don't know.
I haven't got caught up all the way yet, but I saw an email from Chuck Kreider in the Permit Center that said to the judge, we'll evaluate it and let you know what we can do on the permit.
Yeah, the judge keeps asking for an absolute Loctite guarantee.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to go collect money from people who want to contribute and then come in and be told he can't. Right, but we can't give him a guarantee until he submits a plan.
Well, why don't we, if he doesn't have a written plan or something formal, why don't we somehow, whether it be inviting him into board time here or just simply having one-on-ones with us, let's find out what he has to present, because certainly if there's a vision there, let's learn what we can do to help support it.
He's given us a photo of what the building might look like. You don't get permits saying it might look like this. You got to have a drawing. If he has a product that he can buy that comes in a kit, and all he needs to do is put down a concrete pad and erect it on the concrete pad, that's something else. But
I suggested to him, David, when I talked to him, that he find an architect here in town and ask that architect to do a freebie and draw up the drawings for him, which he could very easily do, just like we did for your friends at the church out there when we came out there and did all the plumbing and the rest of it. So, I mean, it's simple for him to do it, so I don't know if he doesn't know.
He wants to snap his fingers and have people do it all for him, and then he comes in
and do it. But I suggested that to him. It's a great project. Mm-hmm. It's a great project, and I think we ought to support it as much as we can. Maybe even if he gets it all together with the blueprints and everything legal, then maybe you could even give him fee waivers so that he can, as a nonprofit, he can write off the permits and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I told him that.
We have a lot of nonprofit. You've got to be very careful. I got a couple of churches that got shut down.
But that's all he has to do.
Well, I'll make it on my list here to contact him and say, share what you have. Let's see what we can do to take your vision and turn it into reality and see what we can do to advance the cause.
This is the first I heard that he's building a building, and that building is going to have to be an internet building.
We have volunteers. Do we have a precedent with other volunteer groups that have developed parks for us, like the ball fields?
Do what now?
Do we have a precedent with other volunteer groups that have developed park properties for us?
Not to this extent, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm. We will write letters of support for things, which we've done for this project, but as far as waiving fees.
So if it's on our property, I'm not sure. We just need to know more.
Yeah, and there's an alternative location. The Heritage Fund on 78th.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Anything else, David?
Nope.
Did Dari ask you to Axel? I got a couple things I want to mention. We can probably discuss it to more extent next week. I've got some phone calls on the monuments that are built along the road where people are dying or killed in accidents and whatnot. And the one on 92nd and Patton has grown now to where it has rocks around it and bark in the middle, and I guess they have a tree with bulbs on it. And at some point, I'm not sure how we're going to deal with it because it seems like it's getting out of hand. Years ago, the state used to allow those to be put up when there was a death, and there was, the intent was to show people that there's a bad highway or something like that. But I'm not quite sure how we're going to handle this, so it's just food for thought for the next week.
Commissioner, I got to talk to Carolyn about that specific issue and last week, that specific location and a constituent complaint. And she said we don't actually have a formal policy on those kind of roadside monuments, so they're actually working on a policy about how they're going to address those so we're all consistent.
I traded emails with Paul Scarpelli, and he kind of, I think he kind of likes the idea, but it has to be limited. He suggested that maybe a certified time, like 90 days or something like that.
Trying to balance the idea of giving them time to mourn and acknowledge that versus having a perpetual memorial on cluttering the public highways.
So down there on St. John's, I told you guys the last time where the gentleman's son got killed in his Volkswagen, and they built up this huge thing with big terrace and big stuff like that. It almost blocked the St. John's interchange from being built because of what they built there. They finally, the Department of Transportation had to go in there. And I know when I was on the commission, they enacted a law in the state of Washington. There is some laws on the book that restrict those kind of things, especially if it causes a traffic hazard where people are looking at it and not driving the car the way they're supposed to. But there are laws on the book currently.
Yeah, something understated, at the intersection of 29th Avenue and 134th Street, there's a cross with some script on it, and it's very subdued, and I can't imagine that that would distract people and be a hazard to the traveling public, but the gaudier they get, the bigger they get, the closer to the road they get, and, you know, they could even prevent you from seeing down another road, restricting sight distance. So they are working on that. They're trying to come up with a happy compromise because it is a sensitive issue for the folks that lost the loved ones.
Yeah, it is.
But it's just not that on the Patton Expressway. There's four or five Christmas trees that the people have already started putting Christmas bulbs on. On St. John's, there's a big Christmas tree on St. John's in between St. John's and St. James that people are putting Christmas lights on, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So.
Is it on private property or in the public right-of-way?
No, it's in the public. It's right in the middle of public right-of-way, in the between the two of them.
Anyway, food for thought for next time. Axel, would you bring us up to date on Quiet Zone?
Yeah, so there was a big article in the paper about the City of Vancouver completing a Quiet Zone. I'm going to botch the intersection. Anyways, it stirred up some of the neighbors around 122nd where our quiet zone was originally proposed because, you know, it said in the article that the city staff was going to be able to put in these medians and, you know, button it up pretty quickly, pretty cheaply, and it's all going to sail through. You know, it was a positive article, which was good, and the city's done a lot of work, and they've got some staff that are very experienced with quiet zones. But the thing with the city is they're doing a group of intersections which allows some to be higher and lower in terms of the risk index, and it allows you to do kind of different solutions at different intersections. And so you got to take that into consideration. And then there was also, I think, what got a lot of the emails you received, and Commissioner Milky going, and people were pretty heated, was there was one email in particular sent out with a picture of a crossing that they believed these medians were going to go into, and it was very narrow and had some corners and inlets, and it looked as bad as the crossing that we've been trying to work with, I guess is the short way to put it. And so the spin up there on the emails were, if the city can do this and it's so easy, what's the problem with Axel Swanson and the county, and why is that guy such a loser and can't get this thing done, was the gist of it. The truth of it is we talked to Dan Swainson
I was gone, so I had Tom Grange, who's very capable, and he's been the engineer working on it with me, work with him. And I think where we're at was it's a different intersection. It's a lot more wide open. It's a lot straighter, level with sight distance. But they did have to put some barriers in place from the picture I looked at. I haven't officially been there. I've just seen the streetscape view. And so the bottom line is, at that intersection, the medians did work. And they were a pretty cheap solution. And if we could do that, we would do that.
So one of the things that
I'm going to go meet with Senator Benton by 4 o'clock.
Okay. Take it easy on him.
Or Environmental Benton.
And make it confuse us. So I emailed him back and referenced that my knowledge of this was we were waiting to hear from his HOA. And he didn't respond back, like maybe they don't have an HOA.
I don't know that they have. I don't think they have an HOA out there. I know that. So where I'm at is Dave Reinhardt just emailed me. He's been one of the leading advocates for it out there. Very nice guy, very informed, and been really good. Tom and I, we met with him a few weeks ago. So he just asked, will you sit down with the gentleman from the city and with Tom, look at both the projects, see if there's some comparabilities in any room to go forward. And I said, well, absolutely we will. I mean, any insight we can get from them and do it, we will. It's just the median solution has been one we haven't been able to do out there because of the geology.
But I think we got past that when we went with full arms.
Yeah, and then they had it in the – before that, they wanted to look into an extended gate. So instead of buying a second – set of arms, which is very expensive, we are still kind of looking. I've been doing research looking into one long extended gate. The issue with that is it doesn't count as a real solution according to the FRA, so you have to get it first approved by the UTC, which is a state associate or organization for safety at crossings. And if they approve it, which it's like a year-long hearing, and they, you know, there's all this process to get them to approve this alternative extended arm gate, then you send that approval up to the FRA. They have a shot at it. Of course, the railroad is probably opposed to it the entire time, so you've got to deal with that, and then you can get it approved. So we have been looking into the extended single-arm gate, but we haven't got a very warm reception from the state agencies.
So what I recall is that that's how far we got, and when we took the cost of that gate to the community, we didn't hear from them.
Remember Tom Walsh was on board for a while. Turned over his cost estimates.
We had three options or two options.
The engineering. We did cost estimates for the three accepted FRA options, medians, wayside horns, and four-quadrant gates. And we turned those over and said, you know, if you can make one of these work in terms of the funding, we'll chase it down for you. But since then, it's been back to the median solution or back to the single extended arm gate, which we never considered. So
our rating was safe in those options that we had there. We were well above or below what was required. We just didn't get back to us with those options that would be accepted.
Well, yeah, so there's the current risk index that exists there with horns. There's the one if the horns were to go away, and then there's the one that you would calculate if you put another safety measure in place. So it just depends on which one you're looking at.
Cost of the arms, and that's where it got up to $400,000. And that's when we said, whoops.
So I'm going to meet with Dave and whoever else wants to meet with us, and we'll meet with the gentleman from the city. You know, if there's something from their project that gives us a new insight, we'll go with it. But, I think that the blow up on the email while I was gone was because they were looking at an intersection, and I need to confirm this, but Tom dug into it and sent me some photos, which I forwarded to you. And I think folks were focusing on the wrong intersection, and I would be upset too if the city made that intersection work and then, you know, couldn't make ours work. But it was they weren't comparable.
The other thing that we need to think about and bring back next week is dangerous trees, and now's a good time to talk about them because we see the trees going down. And some of the things that were brought to my attention was in the rural area, some people have longer driveways, and we're not allowing the harvesting of those trees along the driveways. That could create a danger.
the habitat buffers and that type of thing.
Some type of a buffer area off that private driveway
okay.
needs to be allowed. And I don't know if we allow there or not. Actually, the email I got was from Carol Lebanon, who was coming out, and they had a 2-foot tree blocking their house, and they turned and went back, and afterwards you got to thinking, what if something happened and I need emergency services or a fire truck in here? So I guess it's something we need to look at.
I'll follow up on
talk
that. That would be really good, and I have an example of that firsthand. We had a piece of property, we still have a piece of property over off 112th Avenue, and we had some trees in there that needed to be removed, and it was a clear hazard, and this is in the city of Vancouver, and the city would not let us remove those trees. We got some strong winds. The tree went down, damaged a car. We ended up having to pay for it and finally removed the trees, or that tree. But good intentions can end up with very bad results. And I would think, Peter, please take a look at this and see if there's something in the county code that somehow forfeits common sense and says safety is not first. Let's take a look at that and make sure that safety is always first in this case, okay?
Yeah, so, I'd put a call into Jim Vanling. He'd probably show you yeah. where to start.
Unless you knew of a rotted tree and didn't take care of it, I always thought that it was an act of God.
This was foreseeable. We actually had a letter from a tree specialist sent to the city, and they sat on it for 6 months and still wouldn't grant us a permit to remove the tree.
So why wouldn't the city be responsible then instead of you? Because you did your due diligence.
They likely are, but I'm not the suing kind.
What happens about losers? Nice guys come in second.
I'm not going to sue the citizens.
Mr. Administrator.
5 to 4.
You have 5 minutes.
I'll stand pat.
You're so easy.
For sure, I got a couple things that came to mind after you. Asked if I had anything. The Bolin property, the right-of-way license agreement. My understand is Chris Horner got to walk that Friday.
Uh-huh.
So he had a couple of details he wanted to add to that, but they're close to finalizing that.
Well, that's been a long time.
My understanding. Mm-hmm. And also I touched base with Heath Henderson before our meeting today. We talked before about the proposed road at 159th that's on our road atlas, and there was a topographical obstacle there. They asked the consultant to look at that, and just their preliminary gut check is you're not going to get a cost-benefit to build that proposed road where it links into 503 to go over that gully. So we're looking at a strategy so that you can approve that. Maybe it might be an amendment to the proposed road atlas amendment. So we'll see if you can get that approved by the end of the year.
159th Street?
And 503. 503 to 112th. This is what the TICA short plat was impacted by that. They had to provide a 30-foot right-of-way because of that proposed road.
Hmm.
Okay. So that's how it came up, and it's proposed, and it kind of goes straight down into an 80-foot gully the way it's drawn now.
Okay. All right.
So we'll see if we can get that resolved by the end of the year.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Anything for us? Nothing?
No.
Gentlemen, I think we're done.
We have a couple of guests here. Betty Sue Morris, hello.
Betty Sue was sitting back there real quiet when Ed was wanting to know why we didn't take care of this problem.
Betty, pleasure.
And we all know Tyler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tyler. All right. Thank you all.
Good job.
We're finished.